Happy Victory Monday to everybody out there. You're probably listening to this on maybe Tuesday morning, maybe some of you late Monday night, but either way, enjoy the victory time, as it were. Guardians, of course, we're talking about the Guardians, the first place Cleveland Guardians sweeping the Minnesota Twins, and Cleveland Browns won their first game of the season for the first time since 2003. So everybody in Cleveland should be pretty happy right now. The Cavs are going to introduce Donovan Mitchell tomorrow, and Ohio State's 2-0, and although the first team they beat just lost to Marshall, so that first win's not looking great. Anyway, there's no reason not to celebrate. This is going to be good. We're all in a good mood. Summer's coming to an end, but fall baseball and football so far has been exciting. So even though the minor league season is coming to a close in some ways, we still have a lot to talk about. I'm Justin Ladd. This is Guardians of the Future. And you can't see him, but he's on the other side of my computer screen. It's Willie Hood back with me this week. Willie, how was your weekend? Did you enjoy everything that the sports world had to offer?
Was there anything happening?
No, you didn't miss anything. And in fact, you could probably just end the podcast here. There's nothing to really catch you up on.
Okay. Well, I'm so glad I had a week
good catch up with you.
And the weekend. Yeah. I'm glad we could record this podcast just for that. Yeah, Cade York made the Browns game exciting yesterday. And I guess you could say Baker Mayfield did too.
Oh, that's low. That's low.
Low-hanging fruit, man.
Oh, man. The excitement, he just unleashed a lot of excitement, didn't he?
Hey, no? I will say it was fun watching that whole Guardians and Twins series play out. You know, they had me from the first game, of course, with James Grinchak and that whole stupid hair check. I mean, were they looking for lice or what? You know, obviously they didn't find what they were looking for.
If that's not the next Head and Shoulders commercial, then they're failing in marketing. Although, nobody outside of baseball probably knows who James Karinchak is. Like, if that was like a, I don't know, how would that work in football? Like, would you like hide some, stick them in your hair and like rub it on your hands and they would check it? I don't know. Like, I'm not sure what the rule is there, but if that happened in football, I'm sure like some wide receiver would get a marketing deal out of that, but not baseball. We don't market players very well in baseball. And I don't think anybody outside of baseball knows who James Karinchak is, as unique as he is.
Well, I don't want to see a shower scene with James Karinchak and Head and Shoulders. So we'll pass.
That is not what we're here to discuss. That is a totally different podcast you're looking for. That is not what we do here. Yeah. That was interesting, that whole series. We did a good hour and a half last night on Twitter Spaces talking about the series and how close that Twin Series was, how unnecessarily close that Twin Series was a couple times. I mean, Friday night you had the defense and Rocco Baldelli. You know, credit to Rocco Baldelli. He got in James Karinchak's head, I guess, because, I mean, he might have hung that next pitch to Carlos Correa anyway, but still not great. That made him bring Class A Friday, and then Brian Shaw had a meltdown Saturday and they had to bring Class A in, and then Karinchak had to close it out Sunday. And I think our one buddy Adam, who is a regular listener of the Spaces and who used to be a listener of the IBI After Dark in 2020 with John Fanta, I think he said Cade York's kick and James Karinchak's ninth inning against the Twins with like within 20 minutes of each other. Does that sound right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What a 20 right minutes. You've got a guy kicking, you know, almost a 60-yard field goal for the first time for the Browns to win their first game of the season since 2003. I was in high school last time it happened. And then I was just starting high school the last time it happened. And then you're trying to sweep the Twins and you've got the strangest, and I don't know. Karinchak doesn't usually scare too much. I don't know, but when he walks two batters, I guess there's a lot to be scared of. But quite a 20-minute stretch there for everybody and their cardiologist, at least, this weekend.
You know, I do have to contradict one thing you said, Justin. You said that Brian Shaw had a meltdown there, and I think Brian Shaw was just being Brian Shaw.
He is. That was the 2022 version of Brian Shaw, is what you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is the new updated version of him.
Can we get last year's version back? Like, last year's version was at least, you know, like Windows XP Brian Shaw. This is like it's Windows Vista Brian Shaw. It's newer, but it's worse. Like, remember, was it Vista or Windows 7 that was terrible? I can't remember. I think Vista was really bad.
Vista was terrible.
Yeah, this is like Windows Vista Brian Shaw.
Everybody's
like,
going worse. Back to 7, if I remember right.
Yeah. Windows Vista was terrible. And then this is the new version of Brian Shaw, not the better version of Brian Shaw. We definitely need... you can't trust him in a 6-run game. Yikes. Anyway, go back and listen to that on the... Maybe I'll try to find the link and put it in the podcast bio, or you can look on Twitter. On my Twitter feed, I have the link there for the Twitter spaces. You can go back. I recorded it, so feel free to go back and listen to that. It was a good 2-hour discussion. I didn't ramble too much. I have a tendency to do that, but I think I was better than normal last night. Interesting week ahead, Willie. So Connor Pilkington goes tonight for the Guardians. Or Monday night, I should say, depending on when you're listening to this. He's pitching Monday night against the Angels. Cody Morris is going on Tuesday. Cleveland doesn't list a starter for Wednesday. It would be Cal Quantrill normally, and it would be his turn in rotation. They have the makeup game Thursday with the White Sox, a 1 o'clock game, a one-off game, obviously, to make up for the rain date a couple weeks ago. No pitcher listed in that game. And then they have a doubleheader Saturday against the Twins. Obviously, the Friday night game as well. But they don't have any pitchers decided after tomorrow, after Tuesday. And we were talking last night. I think that's because they're probably going to shift some things around. Maybe they're going to push everybody back a day, maybe get a pitcher up on Wednesday. So Hunter Gaddis is supposed to go tomorrow for Columbus. I wouldn't be surprised if he's the pitcher Wednesday for Cleveland. And that pushes Cal back to Thursday. That pushes Tristan to Friday. That pushes Shane Bieber to one of the games Saturday. If they kept things as it was right now, it would go Pilkington, Morris, Quantrill, McKenzie Thursday, Bieber Friday. And then Saturday you would have to make two moves for two starting pitchers on Saturday, the way things line up. Or I think it would be whoever would go Sunday, maybe Morris again, I can't remember. But so I wouldn't be surprised if the move is made. Curry is supposed to pitch Friday for Columbus. But I don't know. I'm curious on your thoughts on the pitching this week. I think it's going to be Gaddis Wednesday and Curry for game two on Saturday, because you'll have Bieber in game one to give you some innings. That way you're not hurt in game two, just in case he doesn't do too bad. But I don't know. What are your thoughts on using those guys this week and how they might juggle their pitching rotation with prospects?
I think you probably hit it on the head the first time through. That was my thought process, is either bringing up Gaddis or Curry. You did bring up an interesting opportunity maybe that we'll talk about in a few minutes. But I like the idea of lining up the pitchers this weekend for that series. I think that, to me, not trying to downplay the Angels, but I just prefer to line up the pitchers for this weekend series. That series is more important to me.
Yeah, I mean, if you have Quantrill going on Thursday against the White Sox, certainly better than, I don't know, whatever they might have been. It would have been McKenzie, but again, you could push McKenzie to Friday, which is good for the White Sox, for the Twins. Although the Twins did just see Bieber and McKenzie this past weekend, so... Two weekends in a row, always a risk there, I suppose. But you got to put your best foot forward in these division games. But I don't know. I know Curry wasn't great his last time out. That was against Seattle. Like you said, nothing to take away from the Angels. The Angels, the top of their lineup is pretty good. I mean, you have Lauris Rengifo, who's pretty good leading off. And I wanted the Guardians to trade from a few years ago. And you have Trout, and you still have Ohtani. You still have... Taylor Ward, who's pretty good. So the top of their lineup's good. The bottom of the lineup's not so good, and they're facing three lefties. But I don't know. I feel pretty good with Gaddis Wednesday if they go that route. I would imagine that's how they have to go, because otherwise you're pushing guys back pretty far to maneuver things, but we'll see what they do. But I would feel pretty good, you know, Gattis against the Angels, and then you'd have to go with Curry against the Twins possibly Saturday if that's the way they go with things, because Curry would pitch Friday, so they'd just push him back one more day. I'm not sure how I feel about that. The Twins lineup isn't as good as the Mariners, at least.
Yeah, and I feel more comfortable with Quantrill, McKenzie, and Bieber going against White Sox and Twins. I mean, those are the games you have to win, and you want your best pitchers out there. Put them back one day. Hopefully they come back stronger. Some pitchers, it does throw them off, but, you know, I think you have to line it up like it's a playoff series. You're trying to win this division, and you've got your two closest opponents within reach of you still, and head-to-head games with them. I treat it like a playoff series, and I want my best pitchers pitching.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the White Sox are now closer than the Twins. The Guardians are one win away from clinching the series for the season against the Twins. If they win one game against the Twins, they hold the season tiebreaker, although you don't want to win just one game, obviously, against the Twins. But I think they're close in the White Sox. I have to look. I think they're only one win away against the White Sox, too, from holding the tiebreaker, too. So that would be good to win both of those. And they have four games against the White Sox left, so those will be big. Okay, I know this isn't going to happen. We just spelled out, you know, how they're probably going to treat their pitching this week. We'll see. But tell me why. You have to give me a reason why Tanner Bibee is not a better option. Nothing against Xavion Curry. I think Xavion Curry is a fine pitcher. He's solid. You know, as long as he throws strikes, he's solid. Had that issue against the Mariners. So again, why not Tanner Bibee against the Twins Saturday night? That's obviously asking a lot of him, but I know this is all hypothetical, but I don't know. Convince me why Tanner Bibee isn't an acceptable move for Saturday night for the part of the doubleheader.
Because I said so. I mean, that should be enough.
That should be enough.
Yeah, that should be good enough for you, Justin. I don't get it. I think it comes down to your 40-man things. We all know that they're going to be in a 40-man crunch this off season, something that's ongoing for them. So,
but is it as bad as we think right now? Is it as bad as we think? Because I think it's not as bad as we thought.
No, I don't think so. But I don't think that you want to add a pitcher like him or even a Gavin Williams as helpful as either of them could be. Let's say you wanted to bring in one or both of them and put them in the bullpen to help out. You know, St. Louis has done that in the past with young pitchers, break them in the bullpen and use them through the playoffs. I think they did that with Carlos Martinez several years ago. And that's something that they continue to do. I think they still do that. So there is precedence with other teams doing that. But I think Cleveland will look at the whole 40-man roster thing. And, of course, neither of those two guys. And I know you brought up Bibby. I'm bringing up Williams because I think you're talking about potentially two equally talented players. Or got two guys with maybe equal ceilings at one point. That could impact the rotation. I think it's an interesting thought to do that. I just don't think it's going to happen. And I know you probably don't either.
No, it's not. It's definitely not going to happen. But my theory is this. I think Bibee right now is just as good, if not better, than Curry or Gattis. I think he's right on line with Gavin Williams at this point. I think it's safe to say that I don't know. I think you can make an argument if I know Espino's obviously a different world talent wise, but you know, he had the injury this year. I feel pretty strongly that Bibee might be their best pitching prospect right now. I really do. And I know he is the furthest away from the 40-man roster from all those guys. Cause you've got first Logan Allen and Espino. And then, like you said, Williams and Bibee are the same year, but next year, I don't know how, unless things change drastically with them next year, I don't see how Williams and Bibee aren't going to force you to make a decision sooner than you would like, because both those guys should start next season at AAA. They've had almost a half season at AA without a whole lot of resistance other than their own. You know, I think Williams gets in his own way with long at bats sometimes, you know, not necessarily getting hit. And Bibee doesn't give a lot of hits either. He doesn't walk guys. So I don't see how both those guys aren't banging on the door this time next season or even before then. So I know it's tough to make those decisions on them a lot earlier than you'd like because of other how it impacts the rest of your decisions. But, you know, when guys are that good and they make you force a decision, you have to get the best guys in the roster. And I think for as early as the Guardians have arrived, whether they've overperformed with a bunch of rookies and the division has given them a window here this year where they haven't performed well and the Guardians have kept up enough with what they have. I think Bibee and Williams.
Yeah, I'll stop you there, though. I'll push back on that because Cleveland has been competitive against teams like Houston. I believe they were competitive with the Yankees, too. In fact, I believe they won that series down in Houston, if I remember the most recent one down in Houston. That tells me that it's not just the division. They're winning against quality competition. Yes, it's probably the weakest conference. It's the weakest division in baseball. It's the weakest conference in baseball. We can go with that, too, whatever you want to think. But some might say the NL West is the best division in baseball because of the Dodgers.
Well, yeah, they're one. The Georgia or the Alabama of the West, yeah.
Yep. I'll go back to what you're saying about Tanner Bibee and Gavin Williams for a second. You know, I kind of let the cat out of the bag a little bit earlier by saying that you're talking about two equal talents. In my own mindset, I have Williams ranked a notch above Bibee because I still believe that there's more development to be had from Williams. I've long said that there's potential for a number one starter, and he was the guy that could push Espino. As far as polish and results, Tanner Bibee has that leg up, but I think Williams has the stuff leg up, so to speak. So it's which do you prefer? Do you prefer a guy who is going to be ready now or faster, or a guy who, while he may be ready now, will still offer some upside? And I think that's Williams with his stuff and the fact that he was a transition from the bullpen to starting because of injuries, a blister in college that just pushed him into the bullpen. Bibee has a lot of starting experience and excellent command. A guy that's just not walking anybody, a sub. Gee whiz, I haven't looked in a while. It's probably been a month since I looked at his walk rate, but it was like 1.6 or something like that. So I could easily say that's a 60 or a 70 command. A guy walking sub two, that's easily 70 command to me. If it's down around 1.6 again or still. And I'll add that Gavin Williams' control has improved over his last three or four starts too. He's not walked nearly as many guys. Interesting idea, and I think you're on to it as both of these guys are going to push the envelope next season. Do one of these two guys make it before Logan Allen? Do one of these two guys make it before Daniel Espino? And I think that's a real discussion to be had. We'll have that one probably in spring. We'll be talking about that a lot. There's four pitchers right there that should be on the roster at some point next season and impacting the rotation. What do you do with that excess too?
Right. Yeah. You've still got Plesac and Savali and you've got Gattis and Curry. Peyton Battenfield still there, although I'm kind of leaning towards them not rostering him at this point, but he might still be there if nobody takes him, although I don't see why you wouldn't take him, but potentially still an option there. Like you said, Logan Allen, if Espino were healthy all year, I think we'd be talking about Daniel Espino in the same breath this year of why not Espino, because he was.
Yes.
So, if he continued on the path he was going on, there's no guarantees he would have maintained that control, but we thought that he made some leaps this year. So we'd be talking about Espino right now, and he might already have been up, but we might be talking about why not Espino too. Like those are all guys. If I know they're going to be careful when he comes back, they're going to want to make sure that he checks all the boxes in his progression and his health, and they'll probably slow play him next year as well. But yeah, this time next year, I have a, unless they're hurt, unless things go really wrong, I don't see how we're not talking about Bybee and Williams and Espino and probably Logan Allen as well impacting this rotation. So that's my whole argument for this is I think you're right on Williams. I think there's still some polish to be had there because of the limited track record. And I think you want to be mindful of a guy that has not had the starting experience and make sure he comes through that okay and make sure he develops some of those other pitches. I don't see a lot of development left for Bybee. I mean, the fastball velocity has taken him to a new level.
Yep.
He commands everything well. He's got a slider, which is an above average pitch for him that righties chase. He's got the changeup that's an above average pitch that lefties chase. So he can turn the lineup over both sides of the plate. The curveball is probably like his worst pitch, and that's like a 50. I know it's kind of a show me curveball, but it's a curveball that can steal strikes and guys don't expect it. It's at least an average curveball. And like you said, 60-70 control command and everything plays up like Shane Bieber early on in his career.
Yeah.
It didn't seem like Bieber had a lot of plus pitches, but Bybee has more velocity than he does. And I think by everything plays up because of control, I don't think there's a lot left for Bybee to prove in the minors. And I know you're asking a lot to just be like, oh, let's throw him into a huge series against the Minnesota Twins in a doubleheader. You're trying to clinch the division. This guy hasn't pitched above double A, but I don't know. My whole theory is, again, next year he's going to be banging down the door anyway. And I think even right now he's a better option than Curry or Gattis. Nothing to take nothing away of those two. I just think that's how far Bybee has come.
Yep. Yeah, I hear what you're saying loud and clear, and I get it because you and I talk, direct messages and it all. And I will agree with you. He's a polished product. He's 6 months older than Gavin Williams. And as I said, I believe it's 5 years of starting experience in college because of the COVID season. That's a lot. And that's part of the reason that he's in AA right now and performing the way he has. Of course, adding 15 pounds of muscle and that velocity that came with that, some minor mechanical tweaks. I mean, he's really excelled. A guy that I would have said is maybe a three, definitely a four or a five. Now flashing number two, and who knows, he may get up on the big league level and still show us a little bit more. A lot of guys would like to have a 50 pitch as a show me pitch.
Right.
I'll hop back to the 40-man roster situation I mentioned a minute ago. There's probably eight or nine guys that you could argue need to be added. Adding somebody prematurely, so to speak, and both of us would probably say Bybee's going to be up, Williams maybe, and Espino maybe, as soon as June or July of next year.
Before they would have to be, yeah.
Yes, before they would have to be. So part of that not doing so now is also your considerations for you do that, you eat a spot for next season, but it also limits what you can do in the off season. So you're essentially blocking one spot out for next season prematurely when you can figure that out later, whether that comes injury, waivers, trade, whatever it is. But you essentially eat a spot for the entire offseason. It's like having an injured pitcher that you know, hey, he's going to start next year on the 60-day IL, but he's still valuable to us. They were kind of had that situation with Carlos Vargas. That would kind of be, you got a spot that's blocked with a guy that might need some more development. I'm not saying Bybee would start back in the minors next season if they did bring him up. In fact, I think it's an interesting idea. If I remember right, years ago, and I mean, this is a long time ago now, but I think they did that with Jarrett Wright and maybe Bartolo Colon too when he came up. They were guys that came up the second half fairly late. If I remember Jarrett Wright, he may have only got like five starts before the playoffs or something like that. But that was years ago, but that's the type of situation. I don't see Cleveland, for lack of a better word, desperate for pitching. I think there are some pitchers that they're going to go through with Pilkington, Morris, Curry, Gattis, to name a few of them. Those are guys that they will go through and they will look at. And who knows, any of them or all of them may ultimately end up in the bullpen. Maybe they find something with one of them and unlock it, and we end up with a bunch of really good starting pitching talent to use. But definitely an interesting scenario that you brought up, Justin.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you on the 40-man stuff. Obviously, I understand that. If it's gonna happen, I know if it's gonna happen, you know, next August anyway or something like that. You know, I just wonder why not do it sooner. You're clearly they are in a position where they can take advantage and win this division. I know this whole year has been trying to figure out who's part of the next core, but I think Bybee's part of the next core. I think it's as soon as next year. And just one, you're right, Jarrett Wright. Maybe it's different situations. Obviously, Cleveland 97 was a little more desperate for pitching, but you know, you've got 2/5 of your rotation out. Presumably, I don't know, Savali might be back for at the end of the year. It doesn't sound like Plesac will be, but Savali was throwing, so presumably you might get Savali back, but who knows, because, you know, he's been off and on the IL, and I don't know how you can trust it. But, you know, you've got a tough stretch here the rest of the way. And I'm not saying tough opponent-wise, but I'm saying, you know, because Adam also brought this up last night, we're doing the spaces, you know, the next Thursday, I believe, is their last off day. It's either Monday or Thursday. They have one more off day the rest of the way. So they start that 5-game stretch against the Twins. They get one more off day, and then they got that, you know, they've got the trip to Texas. They play the White Sox. They play the Rays, and they play the Kansas City. They have one off day the rest of the way, and you've got a bullpen that's really taxed. You know, obviously, couldn't use Clase on Sunday. They got through it. Karinchak was a little shaky. I don't want to say it's taxed because, you know, Henches has been great and Stefan's been great, but they've leaned heavily on that bullpen, I think, a little bit in the second half. And when you've got 2/5 of your rotation down and you're relying on Connor Pilkington and Cody Morris, and yeah, Cody Morris wasn't supposed to be a starter. He was supposed to be a reliever. Now he's starting again. It's been, you know, back and forth, and he's had injury issues. You know, I don't want to say they're not desperate for pitching, because they're not, but I mean, it's a tough stretch to end the season. If you're trying to win this thing, you got to have enough bullets in your chamber to finish it off. And
but you need three or four starting pitchers in the playoff.
Yeah, right.
Then you can go with an opener. Just do what the Rays would do.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you can get away with Cody Morris as an opener and go to your bullpen after that, but then the bullpen's deep enough. But yeah, I don't know. You need a lot, like I said, you need a lot of bullets to your chamber here, and I think Bybee represents a better option than Curry and Gattis, and you may need them all, truthfully, because you don't know what you're going to have in your rotation. There's not a lot of rest left. There's not a lot of this is one more day off, and you're missing 2/5 of your rotation of experience. So you're asking a lot more of rookies. Why not throw one more into the mix? I don't know. Yeah, like you said, it's an interesting idea. They won't do it, but I don't know. Other than just taking up one roster spot, I think you could figure that out later. I don't know. This is probably the craziest idea I've ever had. They're trying to win. I know in 97, they were trying to go win the World Series. I know the timeline isn't quite the same in 2022, but, you know.
So
why not?
Let's use the same scenario, and let me ask you the same question, just change the name involved. Why not Logan T. Allen?
Yeah, I don't know. We haven't seen Bybee at AAA, and look, Logan Allen was dominating in AA the same way Bybee was. You're right, and he got to AAA, and he's hit some snags, and he's had some issues, so. Yeah, I don't know. I think in my mind, I've moved Bybee ahead of Logan Allen. That's why.
And I would agree with you on that. If I had to rank them, you know, which we'll save that for another time. But
you got a lot of time this winter to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
When there's no baseball.
Yep, Allen's going to finish in the top 10, or he's going to be ranked in the top 10 for me, probably. Very close. Bybee, I have no question. It's where does he fit within, I'll say, the top 6? Because there's 6 guys I can kick around, and I'm trying to slot in different places and also trying to remember who's graduated, who's not, and, you know, all of that into consideration, too. There's still baseball to be played, but, you know, theoretically, you could say Logan T. Allen is going to be rostered sooner. So why not go that route if they were to go after, let's say, some pitching help?
Mm-hmm. No, I just feel more confident in Tanner Bibee at this point. I think I thought Logan Allen was a finished project too. So you're right. So I think that, you know, we need to see him in AAA. Maybe, I don't know, maybe they're, you want to see if he has the same hiccup as Logan Allen, but the fastball velocity, I think, is a separator too.
Yep.
Better. And he's got four pitches. Allen's, you know, fastball, changeup, slider, and Bibee's got four pitches. And I don't know, I might say Bibee has better command than Logan Allen, truthfully, which is crazy because Logan Allen's got great command, or he did. I think that the baseball being different in AAA has also caused some issues too. But yeah, not to say that Bibee couldn't get the AAA and have the same problems that Logan Allen did, but I think the fastball velocity is a separator. Bibee's just really hard to get on top of. You watch how that fastball comes in, and it's hard to drive that ball. It's such a unique, it's such a hard angle to get to. So,
but you liked Logan Allen. You liked Logan Allen just as much last year, Justin.
I did. I was on that hype train. I still am. Like you said, he's still going to finish in the top 10, but yeah, didn't see this come from Tanner Bibee this year. So,
well,
I don't know. I just have that. That's how I feel like his career is going to pan out. I just think the stuff is that good.
Yeah. And let's be honest, we didn't have him ranked before the season started. He was a guy that we talked about as a diamond in the rough piece. And you know me, my theory is basically your first 5-round draft picks will probably end up ranked just by quality of player that you get in those first 5 or 6 rounds of the draft. So
we probably should have had him ranked in retrospect to think about it. Not just because how good he is now, but just like you said, thinking back, we probably should have given more consideration to that, especially in the back half.
When you look at 2020 and what it did to baseball and in college baseball, only seeing 4 starts from a guy, or you know, looking at that and a guy at Cal State Fullerton, it's not like he's on TV all day. So, in our defense, Justin, I think we had reason to kind of be sleeping on him, but I think not knowing that he put on that muscle mass that he did since his college days. You know, he's up to 205 now, and when he was in college, he's at 190. That extra 15 pounds of muscle, you know, will equate that extra 4 or 5 miles an hour that he's getting on his fastball. And it was my understanding that he was getting up to 95 and touching 96 on occasion before he was drafted by Cleveland too.
Yeah, there was a whole thing about him going out wanting to throw harder, like, you know, training to – he said training to be more explosive, and the Guardians – developed a specific plan for him and kind of helped him focus in on that goal, and it's worked out really well. So we'll have a lot more to talk about with Tanner Bibee, I think, over the winter as well. So keep an ear out for that as well.
Or just listen to this podcast because it's been Tanner Bibee.
Yeah, the last 20 minutes have all been Tanner Bibee talk. His dad will be thrilled. No, his dad's a great guy. I've talked to him a little bit. He's a fantastic guy.
This podcast brought to you by Tanner Bibee.
Yes, the Bibee family. Cal State Fullerton should do an ad for this too, because mentioned them a couple times.
Yep. brought to you by Pure Aqua. Find it at your local Aldi's.
we could use a sponsor too. Hey, if you're interested, you listen to the podcast and you're looking to sponsor, we haven't sold any sponsorships, but if you're interested, I'm listening. A little more AAA talk too. We'll bring up Tanner Bibee one more time, actually, believe it or not. I know you haven't had enough at this point. Will Brennan, Willie Baseball, as the Clippers are calling him, 16 for 31 over the series this past week. Had a rough August, but man, he is finishing the season strong, and excited about where things go for him as well. For George Valera, now has 7 homers at AAA. He had 15 at AA this season. He's got 7 in AAA in half the time. That's exciting to see. And let's get to our first question of the week too. From Mike, wanted to get to. Oh, this is a long one. Shoot, this might be a hard one to answer right here, but we'll address it. Updated untouchable players on the roster and prospects in any trade. Let's circle back to that. Let's see. Each of your current top 5 prospects in the order. Okay, top 5, that's really easy. There's a Will Brennan question here, so that's why we're doing it here. Top 5, that's super easy, right? That's Daniel Espino. Not in order, but some combination of Valera, Espino, Mm-hmm. Williams.
Naylor.
Naylor and Rocchio.
Rocchio, yep. And Bybee has to be in that top five discussion too, I think.
Yes, he's in that discussion as well. He might be right there with the rest of them. Okay, so that was easy. And then he also wanted to know, who was the best current player comp for Will Brennan? What's his ceiling? I'm not a big fan of comps, but he's not unsimilar to Stephen Kwan. I actually think there's a little more pop in Brennan Spath than Stephen Kwan's, but they're not totally dissimilar players. I think Kwan just has a little bit more plate discipline, a little bit more contact skill. That's the only separator for me.
Better arm from Brennan.
Yeah, it's for Brennan, he's got the right field arm where Kwan really doesn't. I don't know. What.
I think Brennan's a tick faster. I haven't timed the two of them, so I could be wrong, but I think Brennan's a tick faster.
Yeah, it's close for sure. I don't know. How does Alex Verdugo sound to you? Does that sound like a good Andrew Benintendi?
Somebody that hits a lot of doubles. What did we say we think Brennan will end up hitting? Because you and I talked about it, and we both kind of landed in the same range. I think I was a little bit lower than you. But he's a guy I think that could hit 275 in MLB easy, and would not be surprised if he hit near 300 at some point in time in his career. A guy that maybe 10, 12 home runs. Good player that gets a lot of doubles, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I don't know.
It does sound like Benintendi a bit to me.
I think Benintendi is a good comp. Benintendi is a good outfielder, good defender. I don't know how good Benintendi's arm is, but a lot of doubles, has been a 300 hitter throughout his career. Hasn't had as much power later in his career. He was a big time prospect when he came up, obviously. I'm trying to think who else out there makes a lot of sense. I said Alex Verdugo. I think Brennan's a better runner than Verdugo, but Verdugo is fourth this year in doubles. So, you know, that's an interesting comp, right? Mm-hmm.
He's got a good right field arm too.
He does. Yeah. He's a good defender and doesn't strike out either. I don't know. Jeff McNeil, I think, would be a good one too. McNeil's hitting 322. He's a great hitter. I don't know that Brennan will hit for that high of an average, but McNeil also, you know, has played a lot of different positions too, which Brennan's just an outfielder. I think Benintendi, and who was the other guy you pointed out?
You said Verdugo.
Yeah, Benintendi and Verdugo sound like good comps. I don't know. I'm not really big into player comps. I'm not good at them, but that sounds about right.
No, that's not my thing. I do agree with the Benintendi one. That's the lesser of the two, so I would feel safer on that one.
And then his last question about this was, are you higher on Brennan or Benson on this roster? Who do you think the organization is higher on between the two? I'd have to say Brennan.
Yep. Willie Baseball.
Willie Baseball. Yeah, I'd have to say they're higher. Not that they're not high on Benson. Obviously, Benson's up here, but I don't know. I think there's a question to be made whether or not Benson's on the 40-man roster this offseason. I think they're getting a look now, but there's no guarantees to what could be.
I think Benson's a fourth or fifth outfielder, and I think Brennan is probably a third outfielder at this point.
Yeah, I think there's enough hit tool there to say he could start, whereas Benson, you know, you worry about the strikeouts. Even though Benson might be the better defender out of the two, not to say Brennan's not a good defender, but Benson's just that good, as we saw against the Tigers.
Only if you could put the two of them together, super collider.
Yes. Oh, geez, you would have. What's the comp for that, Willie?
Ronald Acuna Jr.
Yeah, put that in the doctor's office and spin that up for us. Logan Allen. Speaking of Logan Allen, had a better start of the weekend. He had 9 strikeouts last Tuesday. Gave him 5 runs, and he was the only pitcher last Tuesday in the Guardians organization not to strike out 10 batters. Shame on him. Then he had, I think, 5 shutout innings on Saturday or Sunday, or Sunday, I should say. So he's looked better.
We'll let him ride.
How about this? What's that?
I said, we'll let him ride.
Yeah. How about this? Since we know that Tanner Bibee's probably not getting called up to Cleveland this year. This ties into Akron. So Akron is three games back of Bowie in the Eastern League standings, but Erie is one game back of Bowie. So Akron ends the season against Bowie. So there's a chance that they're not going to catch them. They could, but they could push Erie into a playoff spot, and Akron could not make it themselves. So we'll see. But Akron's season, if they don't make the playoffs, ends about a week earlier than the Columbus season. Columbus goes to September 28th. Do you think if Akron doesn't make the postseason, do we think that Bibee could at least get a AAA start this year?
I think he should be in AAA already.
Well, okay, obviously. He should be in the majors on Saturday, I'm saying. So that goes without saying. But do you think that if Akron's not in the playoffs, do we see him in Columbus at least for one start?
I think Bibee could, yes. It's kind of like Doug Nikhazy getting that late season call up. When they brought up Doug Nikhazy, I would have moved up Bibee if there was a spot for him in Columbus. You know, that's where I was. I would have moved him before Williams because I think Williams needs a little bit more work. But like I said, still very high on Williams and have him above Bibee in my head. But, I think Bibee could potentially get a start in Columbus to end the season.
I think he should if Akron doesn't make it. This is Tanner Bibee, Baseball Insider, not Guardians Baseball Insider. So that's it for the week. No.
Guardians of the Future brought to you by the Bibee family.
Yes. Just put ads everywhere. Carlos Vargas in AAA as well, looking pretty good. 5 innings so far and 10 strikeouts. I don't want to say we were right because it's too soon. He's only a year out of Tommy John, so anything could happen. But I don't know, Willie, we're looking pretty good on that whole reliever prediction for Carlos Vargas. He's on the 40. He's in AAA. He's looking great. When are we going to see Carlos Vargas now? So is it going to be as a reliever?
Somebody asked the question over the weekend. Maybe it was Brett Zellman. I don't remember. But somebody asked the question, why not just go ahead and DFA Brian Shaw and then call up Carlos Vargas? And I said that they'll play out the season with Shaw, but Vargas probably doesn't start in Cleveland until next season. I could see Vargas on the opening day roster next year because he's a reliever or will likely be used as a reliever. Maybe I should say it that way. And somebody said, is he done starting? And probably if they have him as a reliever next year, could he start? Yeah, he probably could be developed as a starter. Once they put him on that 40-man roster, and then he had that injury. You got to remember, it was limited time. He was shut down his initial season with an elbow injury. So this is, in truth, 2 elbow injuries for Vargas because he had the initial inflammation that ended his initial season, and then he had Tommy John surgery. I think that's part of what plays into him becoming a reliever, because their track record as a starter is short, but the stuff is there to be a high-end bullpen arm. You and I have both said that, I think, for a long time. He's done decent. He's done decent.
Hey, he's doing all right. He didn't miss a lot of bats at Akron. He's missing more at double or triple A so far. I'm not sure how that plays out, but
probably pitch.
I wouldn't be surprised if Cleveland over the offseason works with him on some pitch design to help with his fastball, because his fastball it's not a cutter like Class A where, but it's more of a sinking fastball, and it doesn't miss bats the way 100-mile-an-hour fastball should.
Yep.
Because of sinking, but it gets a lot of ground balls. It's very hard to hit the ball in the air against him. You know, he's had a couple games where he's gotten hit, but
hard to lift.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah.
But that slider is nasty still.
It is. And he doesn't have to throw strikes either with it. He will in the majors, but
yeah,
doesn't have to all the time.
But that changeup is good. I mean, I think there's potential for an average changeup there from him. Like you said, hittable at 100 miles an hour, which seems odd, but you know what? Emmanuel Classe is the very same thing.
Yeah, they're not totally dissimilar, to tell you the truth. They're really not. They're very, I mean, Classe has got way better control, without a doubt.
Definitely.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Vargas's delivery is a lot more violent and a lot harder to repeat, so that's going to be an issue for him, but
he's lean and athletic and still young. Right. I think all those play in his favor as far as repeating his delivery and improving his command, potentially even throwing harder as he matures and fills out that frame a little bit too.
Yeah, and remember, like you said, a guy that didn't pitch in 2020 or 2021 and before this year hadn't pitched above short season ball. So there's still a lot to come with Carlos Vargas to see what he's been able to do this year. I know you're going to, people look at the stat line and be like, oh, I'm not really impressed, but you have to look beyond the stat line with him this year a little bit. And I would say that, and given all the factors we just touched on, I think there's still a lot of growth potential there, and he already looks pretty solid. You know, control is always the first thing to come, the last thing to come back from Tommy John. And, he didn't have great control to begin with, so that's something he still has to work on. But the fact that he's throwing 102 a year removed from Tommy John is pretty impressive, and he's gotten the AAA as a reliever. So good things to come from him. I think we'll see him next year in Cleveland at some point.
Yeah, his command hasn't been bad. And like I said, I think it's very possible when we see him from go. If not, he'll be up at least by midseason next year as long as he's healthy.
Agreed. So I mentioned Akron was three back of Bowie and one back of, or Erie is one back of Bowie themselves. So we'll see how that plays out. Oh, by the way, I'm sorry. One more Tanner Bibee reference. He was pitcher of the month in August for the Eastern League. Had to get that last one in there on him. Lake County, the playoffs start tomorrow in the Midwest League. They will host Great Lakes on Tuesday night at 7 p.m. Game two and three, if necessary, on the road. Best of three series. That would go to Great Lakes on Thursday. Rodney Boone was the Midwest League pitcher of the week last week. He had six innings and 12 strikeouts. I saw that start in person, Willie. He was good, but his hardest fastball was 89.
Yeah, he's been a lot of 86 to 90 this year. I think there were reports of him up to 94 in college. And he's one I think that maybe he's a Jamie Moyer type. He doesn't have to have that velocity. He can sit in the 80s and scrape 90. And fill a back of a rotation spot, get outs, be efficient and effective as a fifth starter and a lefty with a little bit of a different look. But the thing that he does have that I like about him, he might hit 89 with the fastball, but his changeup is coming in at 75. So he's got that differentiation between his changeup and his fastball, which helps it play.
There's that. The curveball is also super slow, and the slider's good, and everything when he throws it low, you know, he throws it where obviously the control's good for him, but he throws everything right at the lower part of the zone. Everything just drops right out of the zone at the last second, so he's hard to hit low in the zone. I'm just going to wait to I'm going to reserve a whole lot of prognostication on him until I see him against upper-level competition, because when you throw with that kind of control and that kind of off-speed stuff at the high A level, a lot of hitters aren't going to hit it. So,
you know,
I'm not saying it's fool's gold, but
it spurns a conversation I had with somebody today, and this is a gentleman who saw Sandy Koufax pitch live. No, I'm not comparing Rodney Boone to Sandy Koufax, but
what? Breaking. You thought Tanner Bibee was good.
That's right. Just wait until Rodney Boone gets all of these Cy Youngs, you know. Order your World Series tickets now. No.
That's right.
Anyways, a friend of mine was talking about having seen Sandy Koufax pitch, and this gentleman was a baseball coach, so he knows a lot about baseball. And he's like, one thing about Sandy Koufax, he said, every time I seen him pitch, he never pitched above the knees. He's like, it was hard for people to lift stuff and get stuff up because he always pitched where he was comfortable with his stuff, and that was at the bottom of the zone. And he made people come and get it. And you know, that's where he was effective, and that was where he was efficient at. That's where Rodney Boone is effective and efficient at, you know, low in the zone and utilizing the differentiation between his fastball and his changeup. And, you know, like you said, he does have a good curveball too. I think he's got a frame that he could add a little bit of strength, and he might be scraping 91, 92, touching a little bit higher with that. That's probably something that they'll work on. You're going to want to bring that velocity up a little bit. Would it work out of the bullpen? It doesn't even matter. You know, like I said, maybe he's like a Jamie Moyer type, and he can work with that lower velocity. Just being effective and efficient with his stuff that he does have.
And I will add to the release and the arm slot he throws from, the fastball has carry. So it's 89, but there are some underlying metrics with it that would probably suggest that it plays up above 89, which he needs every bit of. It's super hard to compete in today's game throwing 89, 90. I think he'll definitely have to improve that, but I do think he has some fastball traits that give him some other elements of success to build off of with it. So, you know, breaking stuff down, fastball high, you know, like you said, Koufax probably different time now with guys trying to get the ball in the air more, but breaking stuff low, fastball high, and see what happens. Same with Will Dion. Will Dion hasn't really touched above 88 for me, but also is pitching lights out at Lake County, just like he did in Lynchburg. Similar stuff, you know, it's the same story for those two. So either one of those two, if Cleveland can get them into the 91, 93 range, you know, you're looking at another, you know, Aaron Civale type story there, right? Because Civale was kind of the same way at college, 89, 91, and they got him to the majors throwing 90, 93.
Smaller frames from these guys. I think what you also see is guys pitching in college are pitching once a week, so once every 7 days in your pro ball. And I know that they're not doing it now, but some of these guys I think are going every 6 days, and that extra day of rest will matter. But what it'll do is teach them, hopefully, and Cleveland will work on it, but to better condition their body to be a starter in Major League Baseball. And with that, you're going to look to add strength to your frame. That's where you get a guy like Tanner Bibee, who added that 15 pounds of muscle. We've also seen Eli Morgan, who's added velocity by putting on, I think it was 20 pounds of muscle too. Hunter Gaddis added velocity by adding strength to his frame and muscle to it. So it's something that Cleveland has been working on with their starting pitchers. I suspect you'll see that with some of these other guys as well. You know, who's to say Aaron Davenport doesn't go out and add 10, 15 pounds to his frame and comes in hitting 97, 98 next year, you know? Maybe they do that with several of these guys, and there's some guys with some big leaps forward, because that's exactly what happened with Tanner Bibee, who added that muscle mass, made a minor tweak to his mechanics, and then you see him touching 99 all of a sudden. So not saying these guys are going to do that, but they may jump into the low or mid 90s with a little added strength to their frame.
Yeah, and Hunter Gaddis had more of the frame to work off of, whereas, like I said,
big dude already.
Boone and Dion, a little bit less of a frame to add to, but yeah, not necessarily done there. We'll see. All right, so Aaron Davenport pitched Saturday to clinch the captains into the playoffs. So I'm trying to think Tuesday. Yeah, he wouldn't be able to pitch on Tuesday. So here's who you got available, Willie, for the playoffs. You've got Rodney Boone, you've got Tommy Mace, you've got Will Dion, Jack Leftwich, and then I guess game two, you'd be able to throw Aaron Davenport. So give me your three-game rotation we don't know if Jack Leftwich is available. He was skipped this past week to give him some rest. We'll see if he's back. It sounded like they felt like he could pitch a playoff game if they got there, which they did. So if Leftwich is able to go, and knowing that you can't use Aaron Davenport until game two, give me your captain's playoff rotation, Willie.
Man, if Leftwich is available, he would be my ace.
Yeah,
I mean, that's who I'd go with. But if I can't go with him there and he needs a couple of extra days, I would at least put him in that three slot. Boone would probably be my one. I would definitely look at Davenport's been really good the last month or so, the last four or five starts, I think, there in Lake County. Dion's a fairly relatively new starter there in Lake County. And Mace has scuffled a bit, but
last time was good.
Yeah. He's had periods where he's been really good, but he's also had some ugly starts, especially at the beginning of the season. And then, I don't know, he had that shin injury and just been shut down a couple of times a year. Yeah, an odd year. It happens. He's an older starter who is mature and I think would probably pitch well, but I'm looking for guys that have been up and I want to reward with those playoff starts. So Boone, Davenport, and probably Leftwich is my three, but I want Leftwich as that one if I can.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. Leftwich, Boone, and then Davenport's how I'd probably go with that. I might even say Leftwich, Davenport, Boone. I don't know. Who would you rather have in a clinching game? I'm not really sure there. I think I might opt to have Davenport in a clinching game if you could go Leftwich game one, but we'll see. Haven't heard yet, but I'll be there tomorrow. We'll see what happens, and it will be a lot of fun to see some playoff baseball in Lake County. They're an interesting team. Greg DiCenzo has done a great job with that club. I really like him. A very good developer of getting guys. And I think this is an interesting point about guys who are coaches and managers and then in the minors and what their future role is. Cause you know, like in AA, Rougned Odor has been there for a while. Andy Tracy in AAA, the same thing. And Omer Santos is new in Lynchburg, but, DiCenzo seems like he's a really good developer. I don't know about managerial stuff. The players do seem to really like him. They like playing for him. They respect him, but he really gets them to buy into the coming in and doing the developmental work and then trying to put it into play at 7 o'clock at night. He always says, you know, what we do, if things work at 7 o'clock, that reinforces that we're doing things right at 1 and 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And says the guys will get on about how hard they work, how hard he works them during the day. But, you know, guys like Petey Halpin, who's played well in the second half of the season instead of wearing down, and other guys that have played well in the second half, you know, instead of these guys reaching the finish line and just saying, okay, well, we've played a full season, this is the longest most of us have played, they could have easily, you know, just said, okay, let's get out of here for the season and regroup. But they've played hard. They found some good results at the end of the season. So I think it says a lot about the development that a lot of these kids are performing. You know, performing, sometimes you got to take that with a grain of salt. Results in the minor leagues aren't always what they seem, whether they're good or they're bad, but the fact is they are producing. So that does say that at least they are continuing to work and are not burning out at the end of the season, despite all the work they've done. So that says a lot about the development of, you know, from Arizona all the way up and especially in Lake County. So I really liked Greg DiCenzo this year. He's been really good, but seems to be good on the developmental path. Lynchburg playoffs also tomorrow. So we're going to do the same exercise here real quick. Fredericksburg tomorrow in that series, Tuesday, if you listen to this on Tuesday, another pitcher of the week, Ryan Webb. How about this? 9 innings over 2 starts last week, 17 strikeouts. He had, I believe, 11 on Tuesday last week. Good to see him at the end of the year, really ticking things up as he comes back from Tommy John. I think I asked you on Twitter, but where did you have Ryan Webb's draft grade if he's healthy? Where does he fall? A comp round guy?
He was a guy that had first round smoke. I've said that multiple times. A guy that probably would have been 25, 20 to 40 range, really. So that's where he would have fell if he was healthy to me. He'd have been in that 20 to 40 range. Even with the injury, I had him at 63, which was higher than a lot of other people. I don't really worry a whole lot about Tommy John. In my rankings, if a guy in college, if a guy has Tommy John, depending on the level of the arm, like I said, he was a first round arm, late first round arm, comp round talent, then I'm dropping him 30 spots essentially, or dropping him around. So to put him at 63 means I would have been comfortable with him in the 30s if he was healthy.
Yeah, he's pitching great towards the end of the season here. Obviously 23 years old, you'd like to see him at a higher level, but coming off Tommy John for the first, you know, and first pro starts here, obviously really great to see him pitching well at the end of the season, starting to settle in and looking like the guy that we thought he could be, and we'll see where he goes next year. All right, pitching rotation in Lynchburg. They also had their game canceled on Sunday due to weather. I'm trying to think who pitched Saturday for them. I think it would have been, I'd have to go back and look. I don't know. I'm not sure who pitched on Saturday. Either way, everybody should be ready to go by Tuesday, except for the Saturday starter. But it looks like your starters in Lynchburg pitching-wise are, obviously Webb is available. He pitched on Tuesday of last week. He was scheduled to go Sunday, so I wouldn't be surprised if Webb is the game one starter. But you've got Webb, you have Reed Johnston, you've got Alonzo Richardson, who's had an interesting couple of months here. Juan Zapata, kind of another guy, just eight innings, but he's been solid. Trenton Denholm had his start skipped the last week of the year. He's had an up and down season, and he's had a couple starts skipped. But I don't know who are you going with in your three games there. I'm thinking Webb's number one for sure. I'd probably say Reed Johnston number two. Yes.
Yeah, and I really want to reward somebody that's been there all year. So maybe Zapata in that third spot with Richardson right on his heels if he doesn't start very well.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, that minor leagues playoffs, and the thing is in the playoffs, yeah, these guys are going to win, but look, some of these guys are still looking to get work too, so things still play out like a developmental series, but that bullpen could be really interesting in the playoffs. Zach Pettway and Tyler Thornton have been great relievers. They're fun to watch.
Yep.
Sergio Morello's had a good year, and Samuel Vasquez is kind of popping onto some radars as well. That bullpen could be interesting if they're locating, throwing strikes, which, you know, is never a guarantee at low A, but that bullpen has potential to be really, really interesting and see if they can get them into the second round. I like that relief group. All right. We've gone a little bit long. Well, we didn't go a little bit longer. I expect this is always as long as we expect to go at this point. If you're a regular listener to the podcast, I always say, oh, we'll go 45 to an hour, and it's an hour one, and we're not
quite
done. We
still owe another 15 minutes, Justin. This is
all right. We still all right.
I think Mux still had a question that you didn't touch, and Avery had a question I don't know that we answered too.
Yeah. I want to come back to Mike's question, to be honest with you. I don't think we have the appropriate amount of time left today to cover the untouchable thing in the trade. So let's come back to that.
I can give my answer. Nobody's untouchable.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I was going to say. I wanted to give a little more nuance than that, but yes, nobody's untouchable depending on the return.
Yeah, and then that's the generic answer.
Yeah, that's a short answer. Real quickly, we don't have to run through it all. Everybody's aware of the rule changes, obviously the bigger bags, the ban on shifting, the pitch clocks and all that stuff and the throws over. Anybody that comes to mind to you on any of those rule changes that Cleveland prospects that are going to be affected neither negatively or positively the most? Because immediately what stood out to me is the no shifting rule. Gabriel Arias, to me, takes a bump in value. I know he's been better offensively. Look at the numbers since August. He's been a little bit better offensively. So I still don't know if I trust the bat overall, but I think Gabriel Arias' value goes up without shifting because you need a shortstop with tons of range. That is not a Amed Rosario, even though he's been better lately. To me, nobody in the system has more range than Gabriel Arias. So I think, to me, that bumps his stock up a little. Same with Rocchio. Rocchio's got good range as well, but I think Arias is just a tick above. But I think, to me, those two guys stood out with the rule changes. And I think George Valera, too, is one that stands out because this is a guy who does have a tendency to pull the ball sometimes. So I think without a shift, he benefits a little. I can't think of any pitchers I've seen this year that take a ton of time between pitches that's going to impact too much, because in the minors, they already have the pitch clock. So these guys are having to adjust to it anyway. So anybody else that you can think of the top of your head rule changes that is going to impact them either negatively or positively?
Well, I think it impacts second base on the infield. So you're going to want a second baseman with a lot of range that's a natural shortstop and can actually play the position. So either you're going to want a Brian Rocchio at second base or you're going to want Andrés Giménez at second base. I think that lack of shifting will come through more athleticism on the infield and look to make up for it that way. With a universal DH too, you can kind of make up for a guy being a butcher in the outfield by just slipping him into that DH spot. So, as far as the actual rules go, I'm not a huge fan of all of that. And frankly, I think they should just keep it simple. As boss told me to just kiss it, keep it simple, stupid. So keep the rules simple as possible for fans. Make it a 20-second rule all the way around instead of the nuance of 15 and 20, because are we going to save 30 seconds and what's it matter if they do? I don't know. I think if you're encouraging more offense that you end up with longer games. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they make up for it. But if you're encouraging offense, you're going to end up with more longer games, especially at the major league level, where teams are going to look to pull a pitcher if he's given up a couple of runs or if he's not holding runners on base, James Krinchak.
Ooh. We could easily do a much longer segment on this as well. But do you remember when he was called up in 2019, how many people were like frustrated? They were like, oh, they're not calling him up because he doesn't hold runners on. Like, that's ridiculous. Well, turns out it's a problem. Like, turns out he's not good at it. Like, I looked it up. I don't know what the updated stats are, but when I looked it up, I think it was Friday. In 25 innings this season, James Krinchak has had 8 stolen bases off of him. Trevor Stephan, in twice the amount of innings, in 50 innings, had 8. Not, and I don't think Stephan holds runners particularly well either, but the fact that eight guys have stolen, the same amount of guys have stolen off Krinchak as they did in Stephan in twice the amount of innings. Maybe that's because Stephan hasn't allowed as many base runners. That could be why, but.
He's not
walking. It's funny that was actually an issue.
But Krinchak goes for the big strikeout, and with his stuff, it works.
It does, but it's just funny because I remember everybody griping at the time when they weren't bringing Krinchak up in 2019. Everyone was getting mad. Oh, it's because he doesn't hold runners on. Big deal. Well, it's a little bit of a deal. It really is. And people joked, but yeah, it's. I don't know. I really have a lot of questions about what's going to happen with him next year, but we'll see. The guys in the minors have taken to it just fine, so we'll see. But I think immediately the shifting thing has immediate impact on Arias and Rocchio and Jimenez, and in good ways. I think it bumps all their values up.
Yep.
Because now there's a premium on guys with their range. It also maybe dings him at Rosario too. But although he had a great play yesterday, they don't win that game without that big play. So there's that. All right. We can have a longer conversation about that in the offseason as well. Avery G wants to know, is John Kensenoel making progress defensively, or is he destined to be a full-time DH? He looks better in the outfield than he did at third base. The third base experiment has to be done with him. He was not good at third base, and I know he was new to it. And you could say with more work, maybe he could be better, but he was bad at third base. It was ugly. No reason to continue that experiment. I think he's a future first. No, he is not. He doesn't have to be a future DH. He can play first base. He's a good defensive first baseman. So I think they're trying to make sure that he's not just resigned to being a first baseman. He looks okay out in the outfield. I don't think he's terrible, but I think he's a first baseman. I have more concerns about the bat than I do the glove at first base at this point, as far as, you know, not that he's like a gold glover at first base, but I'm not super concerned about the defense at first base. If he can hit the crap out of the ball, I just have more concerns about the strikeouts, although he's been better lately.
Yeah, he has. And again, a 21-year-old in Double-A right now. I think he is a guy that will end up playing some left field until he gets his later 20s. Then probably primarily a first baseman as he matures. Already a big frame, but he's still athletic enough to move around out there. Probably surprisingly slow. Surprisingly so. Maybe that was a Freudian slip.
Yeah, he's going to get bigger. I'll have to watch his frame a little bit. Avery also asked, what minor league failed starting pitchers look most likely to make the dramatic transition that Sam Henches did, so that he confessed that he never thought Henches would be so good in the bullpen? I didn't either. But turns out, throwing more strikes makes you a better pitcher. Who knew? He didn't do any of that last year. And now guys have to respect his curveball because he throws it for strikes and makes the fastball harder to hit. And I don't know. I don't know if there's any failed. I mean, that's more expected. Yeah. More strikes that wasn't competent in.
Beginning of the season, Henches was hitting 95 and throwing more strikes. It seems like this last month when I've seen him in relief, he's popped 97 a few times too. So
that velocity. I saw 98. As far as guys in the minors, though, like, I don't know if there's anybody in the minors that's a failed starter yet. Like, who are we talking about? Because
I'll say Cody Morris could be. I don't think he's going to transition or I don't think he's going to stay a starter. I think he's a starter out of convenience right now. Connor Pilkington Maybe. Might be interesting out of the bullpen. I think Xavion Curry could be really interesting out of the bullpen. But we've talked a lot about Carlos Vargas. Can we say he's a failed starting pitcher? I don't think we could say he's a failed starting pitcher, but he's really interesting. Maybe with Morris, like Davis Sharp or something like that. But you know, he's really been developed as a reliever.
Yeah, he's only been developed as a reliever. I kind of wonder, like, you know, is Tanner Burns maybe destined to the bullpen? His control concerns me, and injuries. The stuff just doesn't look. Yeah, injuries and the stuff just doesn't look as good as it did in college. I think he might make a more interesting relief candidate. Yeah, I mean, I think the Vargas and Morris thing is more because of injury and not the fact that they couldn't cut it as starters.
This might be interesting to people because a lot of people know I like him as a starter, but Hunter Gaddis would be really interesting as a bullpen arm.
I agree. Hunter Gaddis, Joey Cantillo also with injuries too. That would be a thing. If you're looking for a guy who maybe just purely a failed starter, not injury related, who might be a good relief option, I guess we'll see how it turns out long term. There have been guys that made it work, but not this. What's that?
I said Doug Mukasey.
Oh, you stop it. No, yeah. Hey, his last start was so Doug Mukasey. It was one hit in five innings or four and a third, I think.
Yep.
One four hit and, thirds, and it was
six walks, nine strikeouts. Popping 92.
Yeah, that was the total Doug Mukasey experience.
That's
the
left-handed version of James Karinchak.
I was just going to say the same thing. Jeez, it really is. Oh, my God. So, all right, Doug Mukasey might be your guy. I was going to say Mason Hickman.
Ah, yeah. He has been good out of the bullpen. Hiron was asking me about him yesterday or Saturday over the weekend anyways. Yeah. As the pitches for it, I don't know how it's impacted his velocity at all.
It's not.
But, man, if we had to narrow that down to just one guy, I would have to say Carlos Vargas, but that doesn't seem fair because it seems like he's been destined to be a reliever. If I had to pick a guy that's probably going to end up in a bullpen role, Doug Mukasey has to improve that command. And I've been saying, I think he still has a chance to be a left-hand starter. And left-handers, the control comes last. And then control usually doesn't come to age 25 anyways for most pitchers. So keep that in mind. No need to panic on Mukasey. I like just trolling Justin about him because I know that Justin likes him a lot.
I do love Doug Mukasey. And actually, to be honest with you, even though he's struggled at points this year, I like Mukasey more than I did coming into the year because I got to talk to him a few weeks ago and it was a fantastic, fantastic interview, and he's grown a lot. So Doug Mukasey is going to be a major league pitcher in some form or fashion, yep, for sure. I have a lot of faith. I don't know what the role that's going to be, but definitely a major league arm and a major league pitching mind. I've heard a lot of Aaron Davenport said that Doug Mukasey is one of the best pitching minds he's ever been around, too. So that guy's smart as well and a hell of a competitor. So, yeah, he'd be fun in the bullpen, though. I would just love to see the Doug Mukasey out of the bullpen. He would be James Karinchak if he had that kind of energy. He's got the hair, too. So, boy, that'd be a lot of fun. We'll see. John Furlong also asked, Rocchio at shortstop and Jimenez at second or the reverse? I don't know. I think they're interchangeable. I think you can play both depending on who you want to put there.
Yeah, and I've said I think Rocchio ends up becoming a light version of Andrés Giménez. I may have said the reverse of that before the season. Now I'm flipping it again, and I'm saying Brian Rocchio is the light version of Andrés Giménez. So I think I would prefer Giménez over at shortstop, but I think with either of those two guys, you're interchangeable. It really doesn't matter.
Yeah, they're both fits there. I think they have equal range. I might like Jimenez's arm better. I'm not sure, but I think they're interchangeable. I think the only guy that bumps either of them off shortstop is Gabriel Arias. I think that highly of Arias' defense. That's the only guy I can think, but it's going to depend on his bat too. But like I said, you may have to have a shortstop like that going forward. Here's another topic we should have gotten into. I don't know why I didn't this late, but tell me this. A lot of people have said the reason that Nolan Jones isn't playing first base in AAA is because this is the first year he's learning right field. You know, he played a little bit last year, but they kept him at third base because they didn't know Jose Ramirez's future. So now he's a full-time outfielder. They didn't want to add first base to his plate, you know, trying to be a major league hitter, but he hasn't played first in AAA either. They didn't necessarily say that was going to be the plan, but tell me why Gabriel Arias is playing first base and left field in addition to DH or in addition to shortstop. Not worried about his lower claw. I guess in the minors it's different. I don't know. Nolan Jones was never gonna learn first base on the fly in the major league level anyway, but he hasn't played in first base in the minors. Just interesting that was the reasoning for Jones not playing first, and Arias is learning first and left field right now in AAA.
I don't even think it's that, Justin. I think we're looking the wrong direction. I think it's because Trenton Brooks and David Fry are blocking him.
Those guys are having good years. I know it's a joke.
Fry is. He's played a lot of first base and not really caught, and we've went over that. But I think Arias is being groomed for a role for the big league club for a right-handed bat in a way to get him in the lineup for next year. I think that's what all of that is about, is get that bat prepared for next year, utilize that athleticism. Well, he would be fun in right field. Pair him with Oscar Gonzalez or Nolan Jones in right field. That would be a really fun combo.
I'd agree. I think he's not served very well in left field. I think left field is just easier to learn than right field, but the arm is there. But I don't know, just interesting that he's playing these different positions in AAA and they're trying not to overload Nolan Jones. Maybe that's just because Arias is such a gifted defender. It doesn't matter. I don't know. But just a weird, you know, juxtaposition of things that I noticed that I thought was worth talking about at an hour 16 in our podcast. All right. That's all the questions. Thanks for this week, guys. Appreciate it. I haven't done the math on these yet. So Willie, last week, I had Josiah on, our Lynchburg affiliate reporter. He picked me I really, you know, twisted his arm to pick me. I really told him he couldn't come back on the podcast if he didn't pick me. So, I got a win last week. Thankfully I needed it. We'll see how the rest of it goes. But last week though, I took Will Dion and Mike Caprice. Josiah took Jake Fox and Reed Johnston. So let me real quick run through the numbers on those guys, and you tell me who between Josiah and myself did better. So last week, Will Dion had one start, 6 innings, 6 strikeouts, 2 walks, 3 hits, no runs. And Mike Caprice, he didn't have a great week, but he was okay. Let me see. I can't get the thing to work right now, of course. Mike Caprice last week, 286, a homer, a double, 2 RBI, hit 286, 318, 476. So not fantastic numbers. Let's see. Reed Johnston, I think he also had a pretty good start. I think it was just about as good as Will Dion's. Let's see here real quick. Reed Johnston, 5 2/3 innings. He allowed 3 runs, 7 strikeouts, 1 walk, 4 hits. So pretty good. Who did I say he took as his hitter? Jake Fox?
Yes, I think it was.
Jake Fox. Okay. I know Jake Fox had a couple of walks and a couple of steals, so that hurts. Good week for him. Bad for me. I'm not rooting against him, but I need wins. Jake Fox last week, 247. Oh, that's not right. That was the wrong dates. That's what he's hitting for the year. Good for him. Jake Fox last week, 091 with a double, 3 walks, 5 strikeouts, 2 steals. So who are you picking?
Sounds like Will Dion and Mike Caprice carried it.
That's right. I am just strong arming everyone into picking me at this point because I need the wins. But you're 6-5 and you in the field are 6-5-1. I am 4-7-1. So we got a couple weeks left. Columbus does play later than everybody else, so I could tie it. I don't know. We'll see. We've got to revisit our prospect draft sheet at some point, but now is not the time. So, Willie, I have won 2 weeks in a row, that means. So that means you get to go first this week in the picks. I'm going to allow you to slow the train down.
That's coming. I'm going to go with Will Brennan, Willie Baseball. So Justin baseball and Willie baseball.
That's right.
When did Bibby pitch
last? What's that?
I said, when did Bibby pitch last? When will he pitch again is my question.
He pitched on Sunday, so that means his next start should come Saturday in Cleveland, right? no, he would pitch. He would be due Friday, so one start week for him.
Okay.
But Akron and Columbus.
Who's Akron playing?
Akron has Bowie.
Okay. Why did I was thinking it was like Frederick or no, not Frederick. Yeah. What's that? The Nationals.
That was Harrisburg. That was last week. Was Harrisburg.
Okay, I was thinking that was this week. Yeah, I'm gonna go Willie baseball and then Tanner Bibby, or Bibby.
Wow, that's just like straight chalk right there.
That's gotta just, do it, you know, man.
That's just straight chalk. You are just trying to kill my dreams here. All right. Well, unfortunately, it is not safe to go with anybody from Lake County or Lynchburg because their season could be ending on Thursday. So I'm not going to box myself in when I need wins. I'm going to go with Angel Martinez as my hitter because, man, he has been great this year.
Sure has.
Yeah, we'll talk about him a lot this winter. He is a must add to the Rule 5. I'm excited about him. He's been better in Double A than he has been in High A even. I'm going to go with Gavin Williams. You know why? Because Gavin Williams pitches tomorrow, Tuesday, and he's going to pitch probably Sunday. It's going to be a two-star week for Gavin Williams. So I'm going to – you took all chalk in those two players. I'm going to take the guy with a two-star week and see if that doesn't put me over the edge because that would put me one game back with a week to go.
It might very well.
Yeah.
I didn't look at the calendar like you did. To incorporate my idea, I went for the hot hand. I'm going to see who's dealing this week. So it may cost me, but I will add you took two of what I think are two of my favorite prospects, and I took two of your favorite prospects.
You did. I was a big Will Brennan guy, and obviously I'm a big Tanner. We're both big Tanner Bibee guys now, but you were big on Gavin and Angel coming into the year, and yeah, I need them. Next year we'll be a little more cognizant. We'll try to stick to our prospect draft.
We'll have a little dialogue for it.
A few weeks we'll have to revisit that. That'll be a fun podcast to do. All right, we've had an hour and 22 minutes of us today, and a lot of Tanner Bibee talk. That was super fun. This will be the Bibee cast this week.
Guardians of the Future brought to you by Head and Shoulders.
That's true. Need to get someone to get out there to Head and Shoulders. Although the podcast you were, the video you were talking about was very different, though. That was a very, very different topic that I am not willing to approach on this PG-13 podcast.
I'm just saying, every time you see a hair commercial or a shampoo commercial, it's always a shower commercial.
That's not true. You had the Troy Polamalu commercials in the NFL.
Oh, yes. Well, yes, I forgot.
They were in the locker room, so I guess
you're not. I had that blocked out of my mind because he plays for that team, so.
They were in the locker room, to be fair, so I guess you're not super far off there. All right. Well, that definitely says that we've had enough this week. Willie, thanks for carving an hour and a half out to talk to me, and thanks to everybody who got this far in the podcast, as always. Will HOO99 on Twitter. I am JL_baseball on Twitter, and it's official_CGBI on Twitter. But like I always say, if you're listening this late, you're not already following us. I'm very confused. But anyway, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you again next week.